Do you realize that properly understood, Santa Claus brings glory to Jesus Christ? Hello and welcome to Vocal Point, this portion thereof. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest right now is Bill Federer, who is the author of many great books, including one about Santa Claus and the real history behind that story. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Jerry, great to be with you.
All right, the name of your book again is?
There Really Is a Santa Claus, The History of St. Nicholas and Christmas Holiday Traditions.
All right, AmericanMinute.com for more information. Okay, so tell us about who was really St. Nicholas.
Well, St. Nicholas is the most popular Greek Orthodox saint. And so he is to the Greeks what St. Peter is to the Roman Catholics. And he lived during Roman times. The story that the Greek Orthodox Church has passed down was he was born around 280 A.D. and was there in Asia Minor. Today that's Turkey. And the movement that was sweeping through Christianity at the time was if you really became a Christian, you should give away all your money and join a monastery. And so he did. He gave away his money. And the story is that he did it anonymously because he wanted the glory to go to God. The way Jesus admonished to not let your right hand know what your left hand's doing, so forth. But anyway, back then he would help out the poor. And one story that was popular was a merchant in the town of Patara, Asia Minor, had gone bankrupt. And back then the creditors would come and not only take your house and lands, they would take your children. Sort of pushed them into sex slavery or forced marriages or prostitution. Well, this merchant had three beautiful daughters. He knew if they were taken, it would probably mean end a terrible life for him. And so he had an idea. He thought if he could hurry up and marry his daughters off, the creditors could not take them. Unfortunately, this father did not have money for a dowry, which was needed in that area of the world for a legally recognized wedding. Well, Nicholas heard the problem and late one night threw a bag of money in the window. Supposedly it landed in a shoe or a stocking that was drying by the fireplace, and it was the dowry for the oldest daughter to get married. It was a big buzz talk of the town. He throws money in for the second daughter. She gets married.
And On a different night.
And then when he throws money in for the third daughter, the dad had been expecting it. He ran outside, caught Nicholas. And Nicholas made him promise not to tell where the money came from, again, because he wanted the credit to go to God. And so this was the origin of the tradition of secret gift giving on the anniversary of Nicholas's death, December 6th, hanging stockings by the fireplace, midnight visits. Matter of fact, the three bags of money that Nicholas threw in the window is remembered by the pawnbrokers, and they hang those three gold balls outside of their pawn shops. And you trace the history, they trace that back to the St. Nicholas story. Huh. Anyway, he continued to be involved. Now, he did decide to follow through and join a monastery, and so he went to the Holy Land on a pilgrimage. And the story is he was about to join when somehow the Lord told him not to hide his light under a bushel. And so he decided to go back to Asia Minor. Again, that's today Turkey. Gets off at a big port city called Myra. And unbeknownst to him, the local bishop had died, and they couldn't decide who the next bishop was going to be. And the church leaders were praying, and one supposedly had a vision that the first person to church the next morning would be named Nicholas, and he was to be their next bishop. And the story goes on that he shows up at church, he's the first one, and they ask his name, and they bring him in and say, you're supposed to be the bishop. Well, he was not too thrilled because the Roman emperors were collecting bishops and killing them. Sort of like, you be the bishop. No, I insist, you be the bishop. It's like, you know, who wants to criticize today's government, right? You might get audited by the IRS. And so he finally agreed, was the bishop, was arrested, put in prison, awaiting death, and finally Constantine ends the persecution of Christians, and he's let out. Now, once this happens, he's free to go. But now that Christians are no longer persecuted, the next thing that happens is they begin to argue over doctrine. And Arius started the very first heresy called Arianism, and it began to split the church. And since Constantine had now legalized Christianity for the empire, it was not only splitting the church, it was splitting the empire. So Constantine orders all the bishops to go to Nicaea in Asia Minor, just a short distance from Myra, where Nicholas was, and they're to settle this Arian heresy. Well, they do. They write the Nicene Creed, establishes the doctrine of the Trinity, and the story is Nicholas was so upset at Arius for starting this first of all heresies that he slapped him across the face on the floor of the conference. So jolly old St. Nick had a little temper there, right? And again, since it's okay to publicly be a Christian, Nicholas preaches against paganism. And nearby was the temple to Diana. It was in Ephesus, and they had smaller temples to Diana in other cities. Well, she was the fertility goddess, and it was one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. This temple was twice as big as the Parthenon in Athens. Wow. And the Apostle Paul preached at this temple of Diana, and in Acts chapter 19, you know, rebuking them of their evil sin and so forth. And
there's a riot. In the city. Yeah, you can read about that in the book of Acts.
And they said, great is Diana, the goddess of the Ephesians. Her image fell from heaven, right? This little multi-breasted pagan image. Well, Nicholas preaches against Diana worship. And the problem was it was not just a temple. It was prostitution. They would have hundreds of prostitutes that would, so you'd visit the temple, that's what it was. It was the Las Vegas of the Mediterranean. Right. And so Nicholas is preaching against sexual immorality. Today he'd be preaching against the LGBT agenda and all kinds of Hollywood and prostitution. He was a fiery preacher. Well, the people got so stirred up, they tore down the local temple to Diana. And just a few decades later, St. John Chrysostom, he was the Archbishop of Constantinople. He continues to preach, and they tear down the big temple to Diana at Ephesus. Huh. And Greeks pass along another story that he confronted corrupt politicians.
He being Nicholas.
Nicholas.
Okay.
There was a governor who was about to execute some innocent soldiers to cover up his misdeeds. And they rush and tell Nicholas, and he runs down to the execution spot, breaks through the crowd, grabs the sword out of the executioner's hand and throws it down. And then he turns and begins to tell everybody what the governor had done in his evil plot. Well, the governor realized that nobody could know these details other than God, and so he realizes that he's in serious trouble, and he begs Nicholas to pray for him. And so there's many stories that the Greeks passed down. Some are more believable than others. One was a fisherman couldn't get back to the dock. It was a port city, so they grabbed Nicholas, and this is stormy, and the boats are beginning to sink. So he prays, and the sea becomes calm, and the sailors can come back. He dies on December 6th of 343 A.D., and the stories about him spread so much that Justinian, a Roman emperor, built a big church there in Myra and dedicated it there in Nicholas's honor. Again, so popular was he that when Vladimir the Great, the emperor of Russia, converts to the Eastern Orthodox Christianity in 988 A.D., he adopted Nicholas as the quote-unquote patron saint of Russia. That's why there's so many people in Russia named Nicholas or Nikolai, or and you know, the churches named after him.
All right, now
Greek Orthodox churches are named after Nicholas than anybody else.
That's amazing. Okay, now we have about 6 minutes, 7 minutes left of this broadcast, and I want you to focus then, how do we go from St. Nicholas, this very giving, generous, genuine man, you know, strong Christian of the 4th century, how do we go from that to Santa Claus? Short version.
Muslims invade Asia Minor, and they would tear down churches and destroy museums and schools and artwork, and the same thing they're doing today in the Middle East. And so the Christians didn't want their bones of St. Nicholas destroyed, so they ship them to Italy. And the Pope there is Urban II, and he builds
a church. Urban II. So you're talking about in the 1090s or in that zone. Okay. All right, go on.
The year 1087 is when his bones are moved over. Now, Pope Urban dedicates the church, but he's got so many of these Greeks fleeing this Muslim invasion that he goes to the Council of Clermont and begs these European leaders to send help. They do. It's called the First Crusade. And so the St. Nicholas and the First Crusade, there's a connection there. Now that Nicholas's remains are in Italy and the gift-giving begins to become popular on the anniversary of his death, December 6th, that it distracted from Christ, that in 1223, St. Francis of Assisi, sort of in protest, comes up with a nativity scene, saying we need to refocus on Jesus being born, the Son of God, in a humble manger, Emmanuel, God with us. And then in 1517, Martin Luther starts the Reformation, 1517. Mm-hmm. And by this time, there's saints' days for every day of the year. Matter of fact, dozens of saints are honored on each day. And in the churches, they would have statues of all these different saints. And Martin Luther says this is a distraction from Christ. And so he ends the saints' days, and you have this Reformation where they're going into churches and clearing out all the statues and all the so forth. Well, the Germans liked the gift-giving. And Martin Luther said, instead of getting rid of the gift-giving, let's just move it all to December 25th and say all gifts come from the Christ child. And the German pronunciation of Christ child is Christkindl, like kindergarten, kindercare. Kindl means child. Well, over the years, that got changed to Kris Kringle. So Kris Kringle is really Christkindl, which means Christ child. And then I found this interesting. You know how Catholics say that St. Peter's at the gates of heaven? Well, the Greeks did a take on the prophecy of Jesus returning at the end of the world to judge the living and the dead, riding a white horse, and the saints would be coming with him riding white horses. And St. Nicholas is a saint, after all, and a pretty important saint to the Greeks. They just have St. Nicholas coming back once a year for a little mini-judgment. A little checkup on the kids, make sure they're on the right track, see who's naughty, see who's nice, right? And so the Dutch took this, and they still to this day have St. Nicholas. He's a bishop coming back once a year riding a white horse, and he checks up on the kids. Now, in Norway, they didn't have horses, so they have him riding a reindeer, and it began to change you know, a little bit here and there.
Where do you get the 12, the 12 reindeers? Is that from the 12 apostles or something? Or?
Well, that's jumping ahead, but that was Clement Moore and his poem. So the Dutch have St. Nicholas coming back once a year from Spain, and he's riding a white horse, and he has with him a little Muslim helper named Zwarte Piet and Black Peter. And they tell the kids in Holland that if you're good, St. Nicholas will give you a present. If you're naughty, his little helper will put you in a gunny sack, take you back to Spain, and sell you into Muslim slavery. I've actually talked to people from Holland. They said, yeah, on, you know, St. Nicholas Eve, right, that some of the kids would go to sleep with pocket knives in their pocket. And I said, why? He goes, well, that's to cut ourselves out of the gunny sack in case we woke up and Zwarte Piet had taken us. Anyway.
Here we have 2 minutes. We have 2 minutes left. So, but I could see basically then the big story of all this is that there's actually Christian origins to even a lot of the more secular trappings around Christmas time as well. And even the gift giving is a reflection. I mean, ultimately, what was the first Christmas gift other than Jesus himself? A gift from God the Father to us for our salvation. But as far as actual material gifts, gold, frankincense and myrrh given to the Christ child by the wise men.
Right. And, well, over the years, the celestial city, the New Jerusalem, I mean, heaven, that's where the saints come from, that turns into the North Pole. The Lamb's Book of Life and the Book of Works turns into the Book of the Naughty and the Nice. The angels turn into the elves. And then in England, Henry VIII made Christmas sort of a Mardi Gras, sort of carousing, drinking, and wassailing, and so forth. And so the Puritans took over England. They outlawed Christmas. When they settled New Hampshire, they outlawed Christmas. It was the Dutch, when they settled New York, that they brought over the St. Nicholas traditions. And in New York, the Dutch pronunciation of St. Nicholas is Sinterklaas or Sant Niklaas or Santa Claus. So Santa Claus is the Dutch pronunciation of St. Nicholas. Well, in New York, you got Washington Irving. He wrote Dietrich Knickerbocker's History in New York, and he describes St. Nicholas visiting once a year, but instead of dressed as a bishop, he has him dressed in a Dutch outfit of long trunk hose, leather belt, boots, and a stocking hat. And then in New York, you have a Hebrew professor named Clement Moore, and he has a poem for his children, a visit from St. Nicholas.
He was also an Episcopal priest, according to your book, right?
Right. And the stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas would soon be there. A little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. So up on the housetop, the courses, they flew with a sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas, too. And then he said, I drew in my head and turning around down the chimney, St. Nicholas came with a bound. So he's still a saint, but now he's shrunk in size. He's a chubby, plump-eyed, jolly old elf. And you begin to see Clement Moore. After him comes Thomas Nast with the Harper's Weekly magazine, and he, you know, has the
illustrator
St. Nicholas And then you have Coca-Cola with their illustrator that did the Quaker Oats man. His name was Haddon Sundblom. They have him do a picture of St. Nicholas drinking Coca-Cola.
And we're basically out of time, but the Santa Claus that we see all around is ultimately it's the Coca-Cola version of St. Nick going through all those different things. But the bottom line is Jesus Christ is the origin of it all. And if you will, St. Nicholas is like the moon reflecting the light of the sun, which is Jesus.
St. Nicholas loved Jesus enough to go into the ministry. He was imprisoned under the Romans.
And to be generous.
Jesus. He stood for the doctrine of the Trinity, preached against sexual immorality, and he was very generous.
And other than that, Bill, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. AmericanMinute.com for more information. And the name of your book is There Really Is a Santa Claus. Bill Federer, everybody. Thank you. God bless you.